Agricultural programming is made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Leonard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 19th day of June 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana. And a bit later in the program, Matt Bennett from TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, will be here to take a look at the market and the cash trade. And as we close out our half hour together, we'll discuss the weather forecast across the Midwest with Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Along the way today, we'll visit a chef camp from right here in our part of the world. Sean Powers, Illinois public media reporter, will take us on a bit of an adventure through this Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Thursday afternoon. In the soft red winter wheat pit for the day, the July contract up 6.5 cents at $5.93.5. September at 6.02.5, up 6.25. And December wheat at 6.23.75, 6 cents higher. The hard red in the July at 7.03, up 5.75. That's the spring. And now the hard red at 7.29.25, a penny and a half higher. July corn futures at $4.50.5, up 9. December at 4.47.5, 8 higher, and the March corn at $4.57.75, up 8 cents. July of next year at 4.71.25, up 7.5, and December 2015 at $4.62, 5.5 cents higher. July soybeans at $14.20¾, 11¾ higher. September at $12.63, that finished up 13.5, and November at $12.27¼, a settlement price 14¼ cents higher. January futures in the bean pit at $12.34¼, up 14¼ as well. Bean meal at $4.51.20 in the July, down $2. Bean meal 10 cents higher at $4.36.10 in the August. Oil at $40.61, 48 cents higher. Live cattle futures finished the nearby contract, otherwise known as the August, at $147.47.5, up $2.45. August feeders at $207.55. That was up $2.70 per 100 pounds, and lean hogs finished the July at $1.28 and a nickel, $2.62 and a half higher. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. Find us at willag.org.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
Let's check the outside markets at this hour, where the crude oil futures are trading at $106.61 a barrel, up 64 cents. The RBOB gasoline, or wholesale price, at $3.12¼, up 2¾ cents. And ethanol futures at $2.05. That's right, $2.05 a gallon. That's down 0.7 cents. The spread between the two is $1.07 wide. That's 2.9 cents wider than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $4.59½. Current tick, 6.5 cents lower. And diesel fuel at $3.49, up 0.9 cents. Gold on the day at $1,313.70, finished $41.30 higher. And the dollar, down 0.26, at 80.31 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area for this afternoon. Outside the studios, by the way, it is now currently just 89 degrees, and we'll be looking for a high just a bit higher than that today, in that 88 to 90 degree area, with a 50% chance of rainfall. Scattered thunderstorms for the most part, and then tonight showers will be likely. They'll come after 1 a.m., mostly cloudy, and a low of 71 degrees on a south-southeast wind at 8 to 5 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation set at 60% for the evening. Showers and thunderstorms will continue into the day tomorrow, mainly before 1 in the afternoon, mostly cloudy. Thereafter, a high of 87 degrees on a north wind by then at 6 to 8 miles an hour, gusting to 15. And Friday evening, mostly cloudy skies, a low of 68 degrees. More on the weather forecast at the bottom of the half hour.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Let's check on this Thursday afternoon how the futures finished and what the analysis might be with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises, not in Mandeville, Louisiana today, but coming from Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Is the weather forecast there hot and dry?
Yeah. Well, actually, we've had a lot of rain down here. Everything is still green. Our corn looks extremely good. It's probably in the 150 bushel or better range to what we normally expect, probably somewhere in the 110 to 120. We had something like 7 inches of rain during April and May, and that just came beautiful for the corn crop here in Central Texas. And then it's been cooler than normal. We've had a lot of 90-degree days where normally at this time of year we're pushing 100 all the time. So between the cool and the wet weather, Central Texas has got an excellent corn crop and a good start to a cotton crop.
Are you in the midst of pollination, or has that mostly been completed?
It's all done. We got ears. We got big ears. It's all pollination. It's completing the filling stages, and my guess we will probably see some harvest here probably about the second week of July or so.
Oh, wow. So things are moving along quickly there. It'll be interesting to see what you see as you travel back and forth between Waco and Mandeville, Louisiana. But I want to know what you think about the close of the trade today in Chicago and the finish up. And speaking of finishing up, we did manage to gain, 8 cents, 9 cents in those corn contracts. Good sign for you?
Yeah, it's appropriate for me to have a good green day here to talk to you on. And what today's move did, the market started rolling up basically on Tuesday and Wednesday, and now we had some good follow-through to the upside here today. So for the most part, we've brought everything back to unchanged or even a little higher for the week. So we do have the weekly reversals, at least in the making for corn, new crop soybeans, and wheat futures. So from a technical perspective, we still have one more day to go, and I know one day can change things or change the complexion pretty good. But it just looks to me like we're probably going to continue to follow through on today's strength as we go into the weekend, and we're going to close out the week with some nice weekly reversals to the upside. And that is a strong signal from a technician that the fundamentals are going to start tilting toward the bull side of the equation more so than the bear side of the equation. We did see a lot of export activity go on today, and like I mentioned to you this morning, I think a lot of it has just been waiting for the market to stop going down, and then I think we're going to start seeing some demand come forward here, and that should give us support, at least until we go on into the June 30th report. June 30th reports, who knows? I mean, USDA has had difficulty in getting their arms around different estimates, and my guess is there's probably some volatility in those numbers coming at us.
Why did the soybeans go up today?
Well, soybeans still has to wrestle with the old crop supply-demand balance sheet. Export sales increased again this week. I mean, it's been 3 months. Everybody's been waiting for these cancellations to take place. We've got soybean sales right up against the 1660 mark, which is 60 million more than what USDA has accounted for on their balance sheet. The way I look at it, going through who's left to be delivered on, We're probably still, we're probably going to export at least 1630, maybe a little bit more, 1635. And when you look at the imports that USDA has at 90, I don't think we're going to get to 90. It looks to me like 70, maybe 75 at the maximum is going to top that out. So we're still, you know, 30, 40, 50 million bushels short of making it through the crop year. So, you know, there is a general belief that USDA is going to find some soybeans on the June 30th report, but they need to find probably at least 30 to calm things down. If they only find 5 or 10, that's not going to change the complexion of the market. So I think that still argues that the soybean market still has some work to be done on the upside to finish the rationing process to keep ending stocks at 115 or above or wherever they want to put it. But it just looks to me like that is still an explosive situation. Corn futures, I think the trade probably has gotten way ahead of itself, discounting 166 or better corn yield. We've got a long ways to go before that is sealed and dealed and put in the bin. We're going to be entering the most critical part of the growing season here, second week of July, and that will probably continue on into middle part of August. We'll see what kind of weather pattern we have there. So, the government survey, my guess is that we're going to see some, you know, acreage surprises, and we're going to see some stock surprises. And, you know, I've been kidding everybody. My guess is that we're going to test out the dollar limit on soybeans on that report, whether that's up or down. We're going to test it out. It will be, I think, quite wild. I'd be awful surprised if we go through the report without any volatility anyway.
Well, I guess we'll find out at a later date as we end up in the month of June. Hey, thanks for taking the time with us, and enjoy your time there in Waco this weekend.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Or follow us on Twitter. I'm at Commodity Week, or you can follow Dave at David A. Dickey. Our program comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Up next, about a dozen chefs from Chicago and right here in the central part of the state recently gathered for a 2-day crash course on where their food comes from. Oh, the farm, of course. Illinois Public Media's Sean Powers tagged along. A warning to our listeners, this story contains audio of animals being slaughtered.
If you spend any time cooking, did you ever wonder where all those ingredients came from?
I actually spend all my time thinking about where the food has come from. That's kind of the basis and the inspiration for how we cook.
That's Chicago chef John Asbady, who's planning to open a new restaurant by the end of the summer. He previously ran a small Italian market in the city and relied largely on local farmers for his meats and produce.
Serving food is kind of a very intimate relationship with people that you don't know. So I, you know, take pride in finding the people that really care about growing and raising the food as much as we care about cooking the food. So I think, you know, keeping that symbiotic relationship makes a lot of sense.
John Asbady, welcome to Chef Camp.
I think you will probably be overwhelmed with knowledge.
That's camp leader Marty Travis, a seventh-generation farmer in rural Livingston County. Each year in June and September, he hosts about a dozen chefs on his farm for Chef Camp, a project of a foundation he and his wife started to promote small, sustainable family farming. The chefs on his farm for the camp are there to learn about everything from keeping bees to butchering chickens to maintaining healthy soil.
So right here is the beginning of a potato. So you see, we're just barely starting.
Travis shows the campers some of what he's growing.
I have no idea what I'm going to pull up here.
There are wild onions, alfalfa, fava bean tops, and red potatoes. A small sample of the roughly 200 varieties of crops. He checks the potatoes for invasive insects.
If those white flies were starting to cause the plants to turn yellow, we'd mix some sea salt, mineralized sea salt, that we would mix with water, and I'd just spray over this whole thing. That would give more mineral content to the plant. It would also get rid of that soft-shelled insect.
Later on, the group hears from an agricultural consultant who explains how to test the nutrients, sweetness, and acidity of fruits and vegetables, all useful when deciding whether to rely on a farmer's produce. They also learn about some of the jargon found on meat labels, like cage-free, free-range, and all-natural.
Everybody's all-natural. It means nothing. It's a very nebulous term.
That's Donna O'Shaughnessy of rural Chatsworth in Livingston County. She and her husband run a certified organic farm, and she tells the chefs that all natural only applies to processing.
All that means is at the processing point, it's done naturally without chemicals. But there's no guarantee that they weren't fed antibiotics or hormones while they were growing.
O'Shaughnessy says labels only tell part of the story. She says the best way to know what you're getting from the farm is to know the farmer.
And if you're working with a farmer who says, no, I don't allow visits, you need to be suspicious. You know, drop-ins are hard. They're busy, they're doing something, but if they don't even want to make an appointment to have you come and drop by, I'd be really suspicious about buying from that particular farmer.
O'Shaughnessy also produces raw milk. She has the campers do a taste test of her milk and pasteurized skim milk. There's more taste testing later with different kinds of beef, eggs, and honey. The chefs also learn how to kill and butcher an animal. Wildlife biologist Daryl Coates with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources is there with a rifle and a cage holding three rabbits. He tells the campers that hunting isn't something he takes lightly.
The harvest of an animal is important to me because I try to respect the animal. It's giving its life to nourish me or my guests.
Coates aims the gun right behind one of the rabbit's ears.
Just behind the head. There we go. There is a little twitching going to happen. It's the nerves of the animal. But trust me, this animal is deceased.
Coates then skins the animal and takes out its organs, pointing out physical features that show the animal's bill of health. For example, white patches on the liver could be signs of disease.
The lungs are these white materials here. If they're breathing a lot of dust and stuff, you may see little flecks of black in it. This is very healthy. The environment that it came from is extremely good.
He shoots two more rabbits, but this time has the campers do the butchering. A similar exercise plays out a few feet away with three chickens, which one by one are stuffed into a metal cone with their heads sticking out. Their throats are cut and their blood drips into a bucket. Farmer Kate Potter from Peoria County leads this discussion. She shows Chef Tara King of Champagne's Big Grove Tavern how to kill one of the birds. This is King's first time.
Oh my goodness.
Yep. This is that little...
Oh, no.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good.
Okay. That's scary. Yeah, you did it really well and humanely.
Kate Potter instructs the chefs to pluck out the feathers and then do the butchering. Here she explains a bit about chicken anatomy to Tara King.
Some people take off the fat gland, which is right here. If you see chickens preening themselves, they get fat from back there.
Yeah.
To keep their feathers nice. But I actually like the flavor of it, so
yeah,
you can decide whether or not to take that off.
I think we'll keep it.
Okay.
For the chefs here at Chef Camp, this isn't the first time they've thought about the origins of the food they prepare. Sarah McVicker Waters is the head chef at the Garlic Press Market Cafe in Bloomington Normal. She's raising a couple of chickens and wants to start a small farm where she lives in rural McLean County. McVicker Waters says she's working to expand the Garlic Press's local offerings.
Food is so important, and our food system is so, so essential. And the more I can do to help this sort of system work and show that it does work on a scale like a cafe, then honestly, it's like, why aren't we all doing that, you know?
And that's a question farmer Marty Travis is trying to answer. He and his wife oversee a food hub, a distribution network that connects area farmers with businesses in Chicago and central Illinois. During the chef camp, the campers help process food hub orders, packing a cooler with produce destined for restaurants, grocery stores, and other customers. From planting to distribution, Travis says he hopes going through the camp helps these chefs better understand and appreciate food.
These chefs have the opportunity to make all of us better farmers. They can go to other farmers that they work with, either at the farmers markets or on their own, and say, hey, have you ever thought about such and such? I was at a chef camp and I learned about this. Do you guys think you could do such and such?
Lessons that Marty Travis hopes will stay with chefs in a constantly changing food industry. I'm Sean Powers, Illinois Public Media.
Our thanks, of course, go to Sean Powers for letting us use that story on the chef camp. And it reminds me about a restaurant that I ate at on Monday evening. I'd been waiting for, well, most of the springtime, trying to make a trip up to Fairbury to Lost in Time, the little restaurant there, for steak night. That night, we had a great steak, locally raised, I know, and it was about 12 ounces, just $14. You'll have to look up Lost in Time and their website. Here's the thing. They were really big into the locally produced content that they have at the restaurant, and they'll tell you all about it. All of them know. Every single one of the people that works at the restaurant, and the restaurant's got a great backstory, too. Ask them about what was upstairs in the 1950s if you get the chance. On that topic of knowing all kinds of things about the food and the food products that were there, they were talking about the pork chops, not the steak, but the pork chops that they said were really, really good. And I asked them what breed of hog they were using. I thought maybe a Berkshire. As it turns out, they didn't know. But at 8 o'clock at night, they called the farmer. And he knew, of course. They were Duroc and Yorkshire crosses. It's Lost in Time. It's in Fairbury if you get the opportunity. Go visit them for a meal. Remember, they're only open for supper one night a week, and that's Monday. The rest of the time, it's open during the daytime. Check out their website at lostintimeinc.com.
Support for agricultural information on WILL comes from Busey. With over 145 years of agribusiness experience, Busey's team is committed to providing resources to today's producers. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Well, normally on a Thursday afternoon, we would talk with Matt Bennett of TGM in Windsor, Illinois. He's not available for the afternoon. So let me take you through some of the outside markets as they are trading or are closed, depending on the potential market at this hour. Crude oil for the day at $106.58 a barrel is up 61 cents. And the RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, now is at $3.12. That's 2¼ cents higher. Ethanol futures at $2.05. Down 0.7 cents, and the spread between the two is $1.07 wide. That's 0.3 cents wider than it was yesterday afternoon. The important part of that particular spread is that the wider it is, the more easily ethanol goes into the marketplace. This is as wide as we've seen that spread since we started tracking it not quite a year ago in August of 2013. Again, it's now $1.07 wide, and that's a 0.3 cents wider than it was yesterday. Of course, you can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. In just a couple minutes, I'll be back. We'll talk with Mike Tenor at T-Star.
Support comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in downtown Urbana, with a deli featuring iced lattes made with fairly traded ingredients and local milk, and a salad bar filled with local and organic ingredients. More information is at commonground.coop. And from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more, slow-cooked over a wood-fired smoker. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana.
It's National Martini Day. The origin of the martini is uncertain, but its forerunner is often considered the Martinez, a cocktail with sweet vermouth and Old Tom gin. Of course, there are modifications. Winston Churchill once said that the perfect martini involved pouring a glass full of cold gin and looking at the bottle of vermouth. On this day in agricultural history in 1941, General Mills introduced Cheerios. Each piece of the oat-shaped cereal is 1/2 inch in diameter and was manufactured from the barrel of a puffing gun at high temperature. The name was changed to Cheerios in 1945 to avoid a conflict with a competitor who suggested they had exclusive rights to use the word oats in a commercial name. And in 1977, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline began carrying oil from the Arctic Ocean to Prince William Sound. The cost of the single 48-inch in diameter pipeline was $8 billion. Since its opening, it has sent more than 15 billion barrels of oil to the lower 48 states. By the way, the steel pipe is resistant to gunshots, but in 2001, a drunken gunman shot a hole into a weld, causing a 6,000-barrel oil spill. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Thursday afternoon, and Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago joins us as usual. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Tell me about the weather forecast for right here in the Midwest. It's been a really good start to the growing season.
It's a great start, but it really depends on where you are. If you're in Illinois, you're looking at really nice conditions, given that we've seen a pretty decent mix of dry and wet periods. And we've seen a lot warmer temperatures over the last several days. So overall, conditions from Illinois and east are about the best for the central U.S. at the moment. As you head to the north and west, excessive wetness becomes a bit of an issue as you head into northwest Iowa, southwest Minnesota, southeast South Dakota, and northeast Nebraska. So that intersection right around the Sioux City to Sioux Falls area. Some of those areas have seen over 8 to 12 inches of rain over the last 30 days, much of that having occurred within the last week or two. So those areas are experiencing some field flooding, and that is a bit of a problem for the corn and soybeans that are grown there. However, we would argue that that's a relatively small portion of the corn and soybean belt that is too wet. Depending on how you look at it, you could argue that 10 to 20% of U.S. corn and soybeans are too wet based on some of our proprietary applications, but the other 80 to 90% are generally looking at very nice favorable soil conditions. So the picture is a bit mixed at the moment. We do need to see some drier weather in the northern areas, and it looks like some drier weather is coming up, especially once we get into Monday and Tuesday and a strong cool front clears the corn belt.
So going forward, that area that has been so very wet looks like it will dry out. How about the rest of the corn belt, that 80 to 90%? Will they have rainfall that comes periodically and continues the good growing conditions?
It certainly looks that way. We do have several rain chances across the southern half to two-thirds of the corn belt, not only for the next couple of days, but all the way through Monday or Tuesday. Once we get beyond Tuesday, we'll start to see a cooler pattern temporarily develop, but that does occur in advance of a sharply warmer pattern that is fairly probable to begin right around the end of June and into the beginning of July. Now, before you get too excited that we think that some warming is coming up and that we could even see some hotter temperatures with highs in the 90s, the pattern does look fairly conducive to thunderstorm clusters. There's really two reasons for that. The first reason is that we have ample soil moisture across the corn belt. When you add heat to wet soils, that causes humidity levels to increase more than would otherwise occur. And just because of that alone, we tend to have a fundamental source for humidity that will fuel thunderstorms. Beyond that, the other reason is that the low-level wind flow continues to flow northward from the Gulf of Mexico, and the Gulf of Mexico has tropical air at this time of the year. So either way, you're going to have warm and muggy air. You throw a storm system or two on top of that, and that's how you make thunderstorm clusters. So we're just not super concerned at this point about a hot and dry pattern going forward.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much for taking the time with us this week, and we'll talk with you again in 7 days.
Sounds great, Todd. Thanks a lot.
Micah Tenores with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois, joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report and helps us wrap it up. I'm Yovine Extension's Todd Gleason.